giving me a hard time. Anyway, what I was going to say was I think the best compromise, I don't think any system is going to be perfect, Roy, but I think the best compromise is what parts of Asia and the Middle East do. Well, Middle East is part of Asia, technically, though it's not always called that. But anyway, what they do is they move a half hour off the GMT standard, kind of a half time zone. And I think at least in the mid-latitude, that's probably the best best compromise. Of course, if you're in the tropics, it really doesn't matter because you have roughly half of, roughly 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of dark all the time, like in Hawaii, which I think does not savings time because they don't have to. Sun always, almost always comes up about 6 in the morning. It's so close to the equator, I think. Anyway, I think that would probably be the best compromise, but I don't know that anybody's ever going to do that. I think what has been done is ridiculous, moving daylight savings time 2 weeks early because it's still too dark early in the morning for the school kids waiting for the school buses. You know, this is the compromise we have now. Even though it's nice to have the artificial extra hour of daylight in the evening. Anyway, that's my, for whatever it's worth, that's my thought on the subject. It'd be 2BX, so go ahead, Roy.
Okay, I think we'll just continue and be ridiculous. It seems to have worked for us all for a long, long time.
Well, our country is having an epidemic of ridiculous, in part for the reason you described, this whole clickbait phenomena, but that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, Matt, it's probably time to go on to Paul, but that's your choice. You're net control. B2BX.
Sounds like a good idea. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you'll come back in future Sunday nights, and we'll have lots of other conversations on interesting topics. But, yeah, it's a pretty good time to turn it over to Paul WS2N for the SpaceNet Report.
Roy, this is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. For some reason, my radio's crackling when I'm transmitting. That's odd. Anyway, yeah, let me change my power setting. Maybe that'll help, yeah, crackling went away for some reason. How'd copy work?
Sounds good.
Yeah. I went off the high power down to mid-range, so there you go. Yeah, it's like 10 watts out. I go through Selman, and I have the beam, so I always that one way or the other. Yeah. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the second stage of the SLS system, the Space Launch System. It's called the ICPS, Interim Crowd Propulsion Stage. And, you know, this is going to be the stage that they're going to use for the next couple of flights of Artemis. It was always planned to be used for Artemis 2 and for Artemis 3. But 4 and 5, they were supposed to switch over to a different second stage. They were going to call it the Exploration Upper Stage, the EUS, and that was under development. Of course, billions of dollars they've been working on this thing for years, and the difference between the two is the Interim Cryogenic Propulsion Stage has one engine, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, it's tried and true, and it's been, you know, not really for decades, just more advanced as the years went on. And basically, the exploration stage was going to use really four of these engines, which I thought is, you know, was a very good idea. The idea is to not only transport crew to and from the moon and eventually Mars, but the idea is to move material too with those launches. You know, this way you could, you know, maybe bring another module for the space station that will be going around the moon, or, you know, extra payloads, you know, that will eventually go down to the moon. Now, since the new administrator, Jared Isaacman, has got involved, decided to do away with that, the exploration upstage, so no more having these four engines, all liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. They just want to temporarily, again, still leave the interim cryogenic propulsion stage alone. And that will be for this next flight, which is going to take off April 1st now to the moon with the crew of four. By the way, three of those few operators. Well, that will be the first mission, you know, the first crewed mission, and they will use this you know, second stage. The next mission was also planned to use the same stage on the number three, but now number three, which was planning.
Dock with the space station again, you know,
unwind up there for a while and then head home. Seems like the goal now is to just rush to get to the moon, to put another flag on the moon, flag number 7 for us, I guess. You know, we've already done that 6 different times with a total of 12 people. Artemis 3 would have been the one to do it. So they're actually delaying on that because that's now going to be an Earth orbiting mission to test a whole bunch of things out. The following flight after that would be Artemis 4. And here we go with brand new upper stage again, instead of using the one that they've been developing for 10 years, which they're probably 80% done with, to completely switch over to the system. Which, yeah, the Centaur 5, they call it, with the two engines, has been flown before. It's flown a couple of times already it's a tried and true system. But to me, NASA should be, looking for newer stuff, new innovation. They're the ones testing things out, and it should be up to the private companies to mass produce things, have a factory and just produce rocket after rocket. Which is, it seems to me that this Jared Isaac now wants to do. He wants to mass produce what we have now just so you could run back and forth to the moon without the space station, just to go there and back. I think the people will probably get bored with that system without a space station. And maybe that will eventually cause funding to stop, and you'll wind up with a moon without a base, and in the future you'll just, they're all worried about China landing and doing the same thing, and that would be the end result. But hopefully not. And the problem is every time a new administration gets in here, they change things. I mean, there's so many changes every time switch from one administration to another. It's the one that we ever get anything done. This is WS2N. Any comments for the net? Okay. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about this. But let's see. April 1st, anyway, they plan on launching the crew of 4. To the moon. They're not really going to orbit the moon. They're just going to go around like a past it and come back. It's like a figure eight. They'll launch from Earth into the moon, and they'll go into the leading edge of the direction of the moon and loop around it and come back. It creates like a figure eight, which is a very safe thing to do in case there's another rocket that's attached to the service module called the OMES rocket, which is designed to fire it multiple times. And that would be the one. Let's say they do go around and orbit the moon, 8-10 times, and decide, well, okay, it's time to come back. That would be the engine that would fire, that would get them out of lunar orbit to bring them home. Well, the OMES engine. So if that failed, we lose a crew. Actually, there's a backup system for it to some extent, but that could be a problem. So rather than rely on that, I mean, they will test that engine out, on this flight. But you don't need that engine in case that does fail. This whole figure eight system, which has been done before, it's been done with Apollo 8. Apollo 13, you know, the one that was had all the problems. They used the figure eight system on that, where it just looped around and came back without it. That, in that case, their engine, they couldn't reignite it because of an earlier explosion that they had. So it's a free return system is what they're going to be using for Artemis 2. Coming up early April. Any comments? Okay. Nothing heard. So, attached to the International Space Station for the last quite a few months, I think since October, they had a new cargo vehicle go up that was launched from Japan. It's a very heavy, big cargo vehicle that brought up over 13,000 pounds of supplies to the space station. It's a new vehicle that was built. It's called the HTV-X1. Years ago, they had the HTV, also built by Japan, that sent cargo up to the space station, and they would go up once a year. Every flight, they would bring up thousands of pounds of stuff, you know. I think probably 9 to 10,000 pounds worth of equipment. Now this one has got more volume and more payload capability, and the HTV-X1 launched a few months ago. And now it's scheduled to eventually deorbit and burn up in the atmosphere. They need this cargo vehicle to supply not only the International Space Station, but future space stations in orbit around the moon, around the Earth. But around the moon, they're going to have another space station called Gateway. Like I mentioned before, one of the main is that we're going to be for that space station is this HTV-X1 vehicle that just left the International Space Station. So that's one of the main purposes. And Japan built it knowing that, well, we're going to probably be going to lunar orbit someday. So it was designed for that. Now, Jared Diamond decides to cancel the Gateway program. You know, they pretty much built this thing for naught. Yeah, they'll be able to supply, you know, future space stations as well. But, you know, one of the interesting things would have been to send tons of, you know, equipment and fuel and supplies and rovers. It could have all been, you know, done with the HTV. You know, so then, you know, they're going to build one roughly every year. NASA needs, similar to what they did with the original HTVs. Like I said before, they launched once a year, and they did that for 9 straight years. They were a very reliable partner with NASA. So, we'll see. This thing just separated from the space station. Right now, it's free-floating in space. Japan is using it now as their own satellite. They're running all kinds of tests, science tests with it. Now that, you know, that disconnected from the space station, they now have their own satellite. Okay. Let's see. I wanted to talk about the scramjet, the this vehicle that has been built by Australia. It's called a hypersonic launch system. It's not very big. It's probably only about 10 to 12 feet long. But it does have a scramjet engine. Scramjet engine is designed, for flight through the atmosphere. And, we in the United States have been trying to do this successfully for years, and they have gotten some success out of the vehicle we've flown. But this one was very successful. This one was launched by Rocket Lab out of the American launch facility in Wallops Island, Virginia. They have an Electron rocket with 9 Rutherford engines that Rocket Lab has been launching on a regular basis, probably like 20 missions or so a year now. And they have 2 launch facilities, launch pads in New Zealand, one of the islands. They have a big island right off the coast of the main part of New Zealand. And two launch pads there, and then they built the 3rd one here in the United States at Wallops Island, Virginia. And they've used that a couple of times here as well. And that's where they decided to test out this hypersonic, they call it DART. It's called the DART AE. 3-meter hydrogen fuel scramjet vehicle. The idea is to get it up to, maybe 7 times the speed of the sound, Mach 7 was the goal, and from what I understand, that's what they did do. Launched a couple days ago. It gets an initial push from the Electron rocket, from Rocket Lab. They separate after almost 2 minutes of flight. The booster comes back. They just let that land in the Atlantic Ocean. But they let this DART thing take off. And what I understand, it got up to very high speed, and it met the goal of this company in Australia that built it. So, but overall, they called it the HASTE mission, HASTE, by Rocket Lab. So it was their goal to launch it and to see if the scramjet worked. So the DART thing took off. It's going fast enough. You got to remember, the space, this is in the atmosphere. They didn't give the altitude, but anyways, within the atmosphere, it's going so fast that it picks up all the oxygen, all the air, and takes that air and rams it into the combustion chamber. This way, this DART hypersonic DART AE craft only needs to have hydrogen fuel on it, and instead of liquid, also carrying liquid oxygen, so it's getting the oxygen, from the air. That's why it's called a scramjet. And by doing this, you could have, if successful, and they can mass produce these things at a larger size, you could have transport vehicles that could cheaply send stuff to near orbit, and then from the let's say you have a scramjet like this, bigger one, at that point you could release another rocket, and that rocket would be able to get into orbit. And then the scramjet would come back and land on a runway. ultimate goal. But, you know, this is the starting place. It's a dream for, you know, aeronautics, you know, for decades. And, this, you know, again, we weren't successful. We had something called the X-43, which was very similar to this and had control flights and all. This one, don't know if it has, if they had plans of crashing this into the water or if it was supposed to come back and land on a runway. Apparently, a lot of these things are top secret. In fact, when you watch the launch of this dart, you know they showed the launch from Wallops Island. They showed it, you know, the vehicle going up just like, you know, any rocket going up orbit. But the second they released the payload, which is the sprint vehicle, the video stops. That's it, and it goes back to the control room. And you know, the idea is to not to give the public, you know, any more information about, you know, the production of this thing. So, which I'm not crazy about that idea. Anyway, other countries have been involved with this type of thing. I know China is, apparently they have their own, I don't know if they call it a scramjet or what it is, but vehicle, and Russia is involved with one. I think Russia used one to bomb the Ukraine a while back. So, I guess in the beginning it's going to be used for, you know, a weaponry type of thing, but I'm looking forward in the future to be able to use it for space transportation. You know, when a rocket goes up, the most you usually get is like 4 minutes or so out of the first stage.
One other thing I read today,
I've covered this company quite a few times on the net. Stoke is the name of the company, Stoke Rocket Company. Stoke is building their own launch vehicle. It's called the Nova, which is kind of weird they took that name from. There was a rocket that our governor was going to build and launch before the Apollo days, called the Nova, which would have been like, one and a half times size of the Saturn rocket system. But anyway, they have this vehicle, they're calling it Nova, and they plan on launching out of Cape Canaveral. They've taken over Launch Complex 14. Launch Complex 14 is the same launch complex that John Glenn orbited the moon in his Mercury vehicle. So now they've taken over this thing. They've rebuilt it. I've seen pictures of it. It looks like they spent billions of dollars to rebuild this Launch Complex 14. And the idea of Stoke, which is different than all these other companies, some of the companies, like SpaceX, have been doing it for years, returning the booster and reusing it over and over. Well, yeah, Nova plans on doing that with their Nova. Stoke plans on doing that with their Nova booster. The second stage, it's everybody's goal to eventually bring back this second stage. Blue Origin planned on doing it a while back. They said, well, New Glenn that will be launching the second stage, they call it the Javis program. They were trying to build it where the thing would eventually be able to return. They still have long-term plans of eventually doing that. But right now, the companies that, are working on things, none of them have plans of returning the second stage except for really SpaceX. They plan on doing that with their Starship. Starship is a completely different animal than what most rocket companies are striving for. So Stoke is building over the rocket, but the important part of it is the second stage. I know I've talked about that before. They've even tested it. Short flight, they went up, a couple hundred feet and came back down a couple of years ago. Their goal is to bring back the second stage intact and be able to reuse it right away. Second stage will be only really one engine on the second stage. And they call it the Archimedes engine. And, you envision one engine inside this capsule that's coming back. The heat shield that they use, they're coming back at 17,500 miles an hour, would really get freaking hot. And, you're not able to put propulsion engine in the middle of the heat shield, it just won't work out. What this company has done is they have a heat shield, and they have combustion chambers. I believe it's 30 of them on the circumference of this whole second stage. And what's fueling those 30 combustion thrusters is the Archimedes engine located inside. Now, that's going to be a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen system. Liquid hydrogen is very cold. They're going to have the fuel lines, a series of them, touching the heat. So it's going to be an active cooling system. as the hydrogen flows to the Archimedes engine. That fuel is very cold. It will be keeping the heat shield cold. Now, why would you have the engine on? Well, yeah, it's going to be a propulsion system. These dirty engines will be firing. You know, these dirty combustion chambers surrounding the vehicle as it comes down through the atmosphere will be firing, slowing the vehicle down all the way down to landing. And to keep that heat shield, you know, cool, instead of having an ablative heat shield, which is normally what they would have, where the heat shield would have to be replaced every time they land, pieces of it burn off, the skin of the vehicle underneath cool. They won't need that with this. They're going to have this active cooling system. So two things are going on at the same time. As the vehicle's coming back through the atmosphere at 17,500 miles an hour, it'll be slowing down with these rocket engines, with the rocket engine. But it'll be taking the heat away from the heat shield as it comes through. They say once it ends, you know, you'd be able to go over and actually touch the heat shield, you know. So they're taking advantage of a rocket firing it and slowing that vehicle down and keeping the heat shield cool at the same time, and using liquid hydrogen, which is the best cooling liquid that they could use, you know, for something like this, instead of using, you know, all the other different fuels, RP1, which is rocket propellant number one that Falcon 9 uses, or even the methane system that the Starship is using. This is using really cold liquid hydrogen. So I think it's a good system, and they now plan on launching this year, toward the end of the year, from Launch Complex 14. So that's why I thought I brought it up, because the last time I read about it, it looked like it was going to be maybe next year or so, but now they're pushing for the end of this year. I'd be looking forward to watching that and seeing how successful that company is. The name of the company is Stoke. Any comments? Oh, we're at the top of the hour anyway. So thank everybody that listened to me, and we'll be back here next week, hopefully. And the next time I'll be on this repeater will probably be tomorrow for the Club InfoNet. It's held on all of these repeaters. Instead of 8 o'clock, this net always starts at 8 o'clock. That net always starts at 8:30. And after that, they have the Swap and Shop.
Nap time complete.
This is George, KD2FIU, and that's always followed by Radio Newsline. We'll see what they have to say, see if they have any space stories. But now let me talk to you, Roy, ACTGS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report. Back to you.
Hello there.
Standing by. Wait,
sorry. You hear me, right?
See, how is Paul Stoggs doing?
Paul, do you hear me?
Now I know your old Stoggs doing good.
Yeah, it timed out during your talk. Anyway, thanks, Paul. Thanks for all that you do here, the SpaceNet, the TechMillNet, and all you do for the club. We all appreciate it, so thanks. And thanks to everyone who stayed tuned and participated. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I hope you come back next week when we try and do this all over again.
I think I got out, or when you say timed out, I mean, did I just time out, or did I affect the all-star?
Paul, we heard you all the way to the end.
okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how I fouled up Roy. All right, really good. Thank you. I know he has some issues with the bullsaw. Okay, thank you. WS2N listening.
Okay, let me try it one more time. Hopefully I'm on. Anyway, it's been a very, 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 very strange night here. The thing is acting up probably more than I can recall. It unkeys itself. It does all kinds of interesting things. But nevertheless, we're at our end for tonight. We'll be back next Sunday, hopefully, when we'll do it all over again. And I hope you'll join us. This is AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say Slava Ukraini.
Good business, Roy. Thank you very much. AC2BL. And 73 guys, until next week, WS2N will be clear.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. 2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
The W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.